As much as we enjoy the conversations during break, we do have a jam-packed agenda today with some really important items coming up at the end of the day. So we want to move. What's going on?
There's something wrong with the mic.
Something wrong with the mic?
Your light's not lit.
It's on.
Well, it is.
Yeah, okay.
Better.
All right. So let's move on. Item number four, Regional Fish Enhancement Groups. Now, this is a briefing for the commission. Would you like to introduce yourselves, please?
Good afternoon. My name is Joel Williams. Thank you so much for providing time on your agenda to allow us to give this brief presentation to you. I'm a volunteer with the South Puget Sound Salmon Enhancement Group, and I'm also the president of the Regional Fisheries Enhancement Group Coalition. We represent 14 regional fisheries enhancement groups across the state, from the Nooksack to the Walla Walla. And we've been very busy over the last couple of years working with the department on several issues, and we just wanted to bring you up to speed on those. And then Rachel from the Nooksack Salmon Group will provide you a short presentation on the specifics of what the group does, what the groups do. We're about an organization that's almost, it's a little over 20 years old, and we do fish enhancement, fish habitat restoration. We do it with a small cadre of professional staff and a whole bunch of volunteers. Last year alone, our volunteers amounted to almost 50 FTEs working on stream restoration, salmon enhancement, planting fish, our RSIs, taking out culverts, repairing broken shorelines, marine shorelines, and you'll see a lot of detail on that here in a few minutes.
I'm sorry, Joe, you used an acronym and didn't recognize RSI?
That's a remote site incubator.
Great.
Just to bring you up to speed on what our focus is as a group, we work by consensus. There's 14 of us that form the coalition. We work by consensus. Last year, we worked very hard on preventing a big hit to the state budget. We get revenues from the sale of salmon licenses. Fishing, recreational fishing license and commercial licenses. And there was an effort by some budget people in the legislature to cut that funding back, and we successfully were able to make sure that didn't happen. So that took a lot of our energy last year. This year we're going to be focused on making sure that we retain our federal funding. Right now we get $1.5 million plus or minus from the federal government to do our base funding to keep our staff, our minimal staff in place. And we want to make sure that that continues. And with Congressman Dix retiring, that's going to be a bit of work for us. But we want to keep you apprised of that as that goes along, because we may need your help in that. Because I think you're going to see the work we do is really important. And the work we do gets done with very little money, and we get a lot done with that money. And we're able to leverage a heck of a lot of funds to get things done. So that's number one effort, is to retain our federal funding. We're going to work with the department on the HPA process, because we believe habitat permits are very important. They are the basic line to make sure the habitat doesn't continue to be destroyed on project development. So we want to partner with the department to work on that as well. So that'll be a big effort of ours. And then we're going to look closely at how we can continue to secure additional funding at the state level to match the federal level. So those will be some things that we're going to work on. So with that, probably no questions for me. Let me turn it over to Rachel, who's the oh, by the way, the folks behind me and Rachel, these are volunteers, and they're some of the executive directors that work for these 14 regional fisheries enhancement groups. We meet every quarter, and we're meeting today, and so we coincided our meeting with yours. But with that, I'll turn it over to Rachel, and she can give you some details about this this fabulous program.
Does this sound okay? I'll trust Tammy can take care of this. But thank you very much for having me. excuse me. As it was said, that our groups kind of range from Walla Walla to the Nooksack area. I currently work at Nooksack. I was born in Walla Walla, so my journey's taken me sort of the opposite direction. So covering the history, and Jill's already mentioned some of this, our groups were formed in 1990, so a little more than 20 years ago. The legislation was put in place enabling and establishing the formation of community-based nonprofit organizations, or RFEGs, regional fishery enhancement groups, to produce the salmon and salmonids, including trout, to restore habitat. And in, I think one of the most important things is involving local community members in the process of salmon recovery. It's my understanding that you on the commission serve a very important role to the Department of Fish and Wildlife and to all of us as individuals in establishing policy and direction for fish and wildlife species habitats in Washington and ultimately guiding the work that the Department of Fish and Wildlife does. We as individual 14 different regional fishery enhancement groups all work collectively under the Department of Fish and Wildlife that administers the RFEG program. So we don't get to interact with you as much because we're a few steps removed. But ultimately, we feel that the work that you do guides the work that we end up doing on the ground. So I'm most excited today about sharing with you some examples of what that work looks like on the ground. It's been said that salmon are an icon of Northwest culture and the foundation of health of our watersheds. If the salmon aren't doing well, our watersheds are not doing well, and neither are we. And I would include that to reference trout and other native wildlife species. So the map, to kind of frame this where we're at, the 14 different groups have most of the state broken down geographically. We are missing the one area in kind of the northeastern corner because that's outside of the anadromous fish zone. And the RFEG program was formed initially with a focus of salmon recovery. Salmon recovery for commercial fishing interests, salmon recovery for economic viability, and that was the initial focus. We have done some extra projects, if you will, in that kind of no man's land, dealing with fish passage barriers, which would benefit native trout populations. But our focus really is in that 14 different group area. And when I wrap up today, I want to introduce representatives from most of the other RFEGs who are here to be able to answer the specific questions about on-the-ground work. I can answer those for our region. I'm not going to pretend to answer them for anybody else's region. So in general, Joe already mentioned some of these details, but the big picture for our funding mechanism. All 14 groups working together equally, we receive about $90,000 a year currently through federal funding that comes through Fish and Wildlife Service to the department and then is administered from DFW to each individual RFEG on part of our biennium contracting process. Additionally, we receive about $40,000 a year through the RFEG dedicated 209 account, non-general funds, and those funds are made up of the surcharge from the fishing licenses, the recreational licenses, and the commercial fishing licenses. Those monies go into a pot and are distributed throughout the RFEG program. The rest of the money that makes up our individual budgets comes from competitive grants, in-kind contributions, donors in our own communities, and a lot of creativity and leveraging. We, on average, will leverage about 15 to 1 with the base level funds that we get, expanding that more than 15 times over, to accomplish a lot more work than the department is kind of giving us the base level funding for. At this point, we've got more than 20 years of momentum, and we feel that because we're all independent nonprofit organizations, we have a lot of kind of local niches and the ability to meet the needs in our community. Because the needs in my community are going to be very different than the needs in the Yakima area or out on the peninsula. So by operating as 14 different groups, we can work in those kind of micro-regions that we represent. As Joe mentioned, we don't have the security of federal funding beyond 2013, so that's our focus this year. And we definitely recognize that without that federal funding, our capacity is reduced dramatically. We have been working with Joe Storr and a lot of his people to try to kind of clarify the money that comes to the department and to the RFEG program through excess eggs, carcass, roe from state hatcheries. And we feel that an increase in management with the producer that takes care of that program will bring more revenue to the department and ultimately to us. It wouldn't offset the loss of the federal funds, but it would probably keep our program solvent. Overall, we work cooperatively with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, I would hope Joe would agree, to manage funds, to report on our accomplishments, and to complete projects that are in line with Department of Fish and Wildlife's goals and the federal mandate to recover listed species. So a visual representation of a lot of what I just said. The leveraged funds are a really important part of what we do. Most of our groups work with a tremendous amount of volunteers. In the past 15 years, we've leveraged more than 1 million volunteer hours donated to the process of salmon recovery. That and the additional grant revenue that is brought in by all of the different groups is represented here in this picture. And I should clarify, the red box there are the funds that come, the federal and the state funds that come to us through DFW. And then the green bar represents the additional funding that the RFVGs as a coalition bring to the process. We try to keep our administrative costs very low. And I think all of the groups pride themselves in getting the work done on the ground above a glittery office space or something along those lines. So definitely keeping administrative costs low. As Joe mentioned, we definitely feel like we are an important economic engine in jobs, in state economy. Between the 14 different groups, we represent more than 60 FTEs, and a lot of us work with interns, full-time interns. I've worked with interns who work 25 hours a week as volunteers for more than a year, and it's just amazing. A lot of professionalism. We feel that we're very efficient, effective, and as I mentioned, a huge part of it is the volunteer time. Our organization and many of the other organizations do community work parties. And on Earth Day this year, I was out with my son along the South Fork of our local river, where we have listed spring Chinook that are listed under the ESA. And we were planting trees with 223 other volunteers. It was absolutely amazing. And that's just one example of the kinds of projects that all of these groups do on the ground. When community members come out and plant a tree along a stream, they don't forget that tree. They come back, they'll look at it in 20 years. I still go back and look at the tree that I planted at my elementary school when I moved schools in third grade, and it's huge. So annual construction services, that's another big part of what we do when it comes to the economic factor. We hire contractors to come out and do a lot of the on-the-ground, in-stream restoration work. And that generates a lot of money going into our local economies. Since 1995, some summaries here. I'll let you read the numbers, but what I'm going to do after this slide is transition into some visual examples of the different types of work that we do. So we'll look at some fish passage projects. Those result in miles of streams opened. We'll look at some habitat restoration projects, including riparian areas, nutrient supplementation through carcass distribution, and fish release. So some examples of fish passage barrier removal. Here, there's a variety of different things that can cause fish passage problems. One of them is an earthen dam in the upper left corner. That's a dam that was in place for about 60 years for a local dairy. And when that was removed, there were about 3 miles of stream channel that were opened up. Bridge was put in so the farmer could still get from one field to the other. And opened up a lot of habitat for fish. A lot of failing culverts can be, I don't know which screen is better for you to look at, but failing culverts like here, fish can't get through those, and replacing those with larger bottomless culverts or bridges will enable fish passage, not just for the next few years or till the next big flood cycle, but into perpetuity. Some other areas we're looking at the agriculture stream interaction, and livestock crossings can be a challenge with that. So replacing livestock crossings with bridges, enabling the farmer to get the machinery, the animals, etc., back and forth from one field to the other without walking animals through the creek, and increasing fecal coliform and a whole bunch of other issues. In some cases, many of our groups have found that invasive and exotic species, in this case reed canary grass, can choke channels so completely that the fish can't make it through. One of my first experiences on a salmon restoration project, well, I hadn't been restored yet, but was going out to a stream and seeing mats of reed canary grass forming these dams. And there were salmon that were trying to get over those mats, getting stuck on them, and then the local farm dogs were coming and helping themselves, which, of course, makes sense. But by removing that reed canary grass and those dams, we're enabling the fish to swim right through that area safely, often under the cover of night. So that lower picture has been planted since it was taken, but it definitely shows you the physical change from removing the reed canary grass. Some examples of in-stream restoration. Often that will include adding large woody debris, which increases the channel complexity, more places for fish to hide, rear, eat, etc. And adding large woody debris is an important component of in-stream restoration. In the Middle Fork of the Nooksack, some examples there. It can be used as fish-friendly bank protection in particular flood-prone areas, but in most cases we're putting in large woody debris throughout the state to provide more channel complexity, stabilize sandbars and gravel bars and spawning habitat. I think riparian restoration is one of the main components of what we do. We've done more than 3,000 riparian restoration projects throughout the state. Some examples here from Chelan County. And this is one of the main ways that we engage volunteers in the work that we do, because we can bring volunteers out, our crew members can teach them how to plant a tree, our crew members can come back and do the maintenance to ensure survival. We can't bring volunteers out and put them on an excavator. It just doesn't make sense. So planting trees is a great way to kind of involve the community. The nutrient enhancement is another really fun way to involve community members as volunteers to come out and bring excess carcasses that come into our state hatcheries that get distributed back into streams to help the nutrient supplementation. Sometimes those will be whole carcasses, and sometimes they're put into these little tablets, which provide the same nutrient input and can be a lot easier to maybe backpack into a more remote area. Another example of the type of work that RFEGs do is releasing fish. So working in our local regions with our own co-managers at our local hatcheries to identify the right kind of fish to put in the right kind of stream that's been restored, that's ready for it, and to bring those fish out, whether it's through the remote site incubator or RSI that's pictured here, or reared in the hatchery, or hatched in the hatchery, reared to a release point, brought out to an acclimation site where those fish can acclimate to the water. And then those fish are prompted to bypass the hatchery, return, spawn in the wild, and start kind of seeding that wild population. We take the work that we do very seriously. We do assessments and monitoring before we do projects, during the projects, and after the projects. Types of monitoring that we do include and are not limited to spawning surveys, smolt traps, identifying the out-migrating population, water quality, culverts, and in-stream. And then there's education and outreach. And we all do outreach and education in our own communities. Collectively, the RFEGs educate thousands of school children each year about salmon, about trout, about their life cycle, their habitat needs, how to be good stewards. And it is amazing watching these kids get excited about these fish. And I have seen so much enthusiasm from these kids, who I believe are our future decision makers. These kids are going to grow up caring about fish and the decisions that we make. So that's in a summary of the work that we do. We feel that because of the work we do, the steelhead fishing good in north central Washington is going to continue, And our hope is that salmon populations will continue to be on the rebound for our fishing community. I want to introduce now the representatives from all the different groups and then turn things over to questions that hopefully we as a group can answer from our own regions. So just kind of going through the list from Region 1, I'm here with one of my board members, Dave Beatty. Maybe what I can do is say the name and you can give a wave. Sorry. So Region 2, the Skagit Fishery Enhancement Group. Allison's here and happy to answer questions. From Region 3, where the Snohomish and Stillaguamish rivers are, we've got, all right. From Region 4, we don't have a representative today.
Yes, we
do. Oh, good. Thank you. I didn't see you. Glad you're here. The South Sound Puget area, or the South Puget Sound area, Region 5, you've met Joe and Lance is here. And then bouncing over to the peninsula into Region 7, we've got the North Olympic Salmon Coalition. Rebecca's here. Down to the Pacific Coast Salmon Coalition out Jefferson County. Carl's with us. Moving down to the Wallapa group, we've got Bob is here.
Yep, over there.
I can't keep track of myself, much less a whole group. Down in the Lower Columbia, Tony couldn't join us today and sends his regrets. From Region 12, the Mid-Columbia group, one of the larger groups spanning seven counties. We've got Doug here. Over into 13 with the Tri-State Steelheaders doing a lot of important work in back in my hometown. We've got Larry with us. And then in the Upper Columbia region of the Cascade Columbia group, Jason Lundgren is here as well. So with that, hopefully you've got a kind of a visual idea of who your people are, because you folks are from all over the state, and so are we. So I'd love
that
to open the floor
terrific.
To questions.
Both of you did an excellent job conveying the enthusiasm, the power of volunteers. I have to say, I know that you're going to hear this from the rest of the commission, too, but we can't tell you how grateful we are for people like you who care about the resources. Without you spreading the word and teaching the young, the future will not be very bright. So, again, we're incredibly grateful for what you do. Commissioner Smith?
Thank you. Excellent job, Rachel, et al. Thank you. Yeah, just going through it, echoing what Miranda said, some of the words, leveraging, partnership, volunteerism, exactly what we have to do. But a couple other layers, the whole issue of conservation education is exactly what we have to do. And in that, embedded in that, I see a lot of citizen science, which is just again, goes hand in hand. The bang for the buck is there. I think what you all do collectively, we should put up the flagpole much higher, this is a what you do makes Washington proud, and I think in all aspects of it, what we're looking at, one of the initiatives is the whole issue of children of K-12 are not getting out in the woods anymore, in the streams. You know, the last child left indoors, all that stuff. We're looking at that as a commission, trying to. How do we deal with that? I see your collectivism here in terms of all of you being a good partnership. So look forward to hearing from us on that, because we are meeting again tonight about this. How do we get kids back into nature? You know, and part of that's very pragmatic, because hunting sales are going down, fishing sales are you know sporadic or going down in some areas, and the health issue is another factor of all that. So seeing how you do this on a regional basis, the decentralization of this plays very well into our collective goals. So we see you as a partner in a new way, in a new initiative. But I want to just throw this back. How can we, as the commission, assist your collective goals? You know, and not for a quick answer, but just to think about that, because how can we help you achieve our collective goals. So,
Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair, and Joe and Rachel, fantastic. I became a believer last year and an advocate during your struggles for your budget with the state, and that's in part because of Jason. And Jason has educated me about what you're doing up in Region 14, and I'm impressed. And actually has brought it right home to where I live in Lake Wenatchee. Let me add some words to the list that Commissioner Smith gave, a few verbs. Your importance, your work is important. Inexpensive. We would probably have to hire, or the department have to hire, 100 FTEs, and we can't afford to do that. So you're performing a service. Volunteerism, over 1 million hours, in your example of 200 some tree planters, was excellent. That occurred a similar planting up in Napiqua in our area. But I do have a specific question because it deals with the lifeblood of your organization, and that's funding. And your federal funding runs out in 2013. Is that for multiple year funding, or is that for a 2 year period, 1 year? Here again, we should know your game plan so the state can be a part of that game plan and what you intend to do about that.
Thank you. And first, thank you all for your kind words about the program. Appreciate that very much. We're not sure we're hoping the federal funding doesn't run out, of course, and we're going to work hard to prevent it from, but it's with the restrictions at the federal level, it's a strong possibility. I think if it does, Commissioner, that it would set us back at least, there might be enough funding for 1 year left in that federal budget, so it wouldn't dry up that year that it ended. There would be some carryover, but it probably wouldn't carry over for more than a year. That federal funding right now makes up about half of the base funding for these groups. So without that would be a significant setback to each one of these groups. Some groups, I think, could sustain it because they're a little bit stronger than some other groups. Other groups would be, I think, impacted significantly. Now, let me just add that the work we've done with the department recently on excess carcass and roe has been very fruitful, and we've had a good relationship with the department on working that issue. And we would anticipate that would bring in about $500,000 a year, but that doesn't replace $1.5 million of federal funding. So we're set back about $1 million a year. And any way that you commissioners could help us making the point to our congressional delegation that this program is very important in meeting the ESA needs in this state, because that's where this is going. We are a big contributor. These groups are a big contributor in trying to get the ESA listing off the books. All the habitat restoration we do, we believe, is helpful in that way. Educating the people is helpful in that way. And doing the science that we do in the field is helpful in that way. So I think any way that you folks could work with our congressional delegation to let them know how important this is for the health of the state, for the health of the recreational fishing industry, for the health of the entire state in general would be appreciated by us. I don't know, does that help?
It helps. Some specifics later on okay. The right contacts,
yes,
and who you've met with, and how they influence people would be even
we're
more
meeting
helpful.
We are meeting this afternoon, and this is an agenda topic for the coalition. And we'll have a little bit more information after that meeting.
Okay. Okay. Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've enjoyed your presentation also, and I've worked with nonprofits a lot of my career, and I work for one now, but I'm also on several nonprofits. And I'm just curious about your nonprofit makeup. You said there was a board member here, and how they support you and how that works. Could you explain that just a little?
Sure. With the understanding, of course, that all 14 groups are very different, I can speak from my personal experience with our organization. We have a staff of 4.5, and then we work with AmeriCorps members, Washington Conservation Corps crew, and a lot of volunteers to get the work done. But all of the work that we do is really governed and directed by our board of directors. We have 18 members on our board. Three of those positions are unique in that they are reserved for student positions only. So the student student positions are one-year positions. Our regular at-large board member positions are 3 years. And with the RFEG coalition, when we, as Joe said, we try to meet quarterly, we, all of the RFEGs try to have one board member come to those coalition meetings because we really believe that the board members are directing the organization and providing the leadership. They can report to their fellow board members about the work that we're doing if they're involved at the regional level as well. So that's an example of our group. I know that there are other groups that have, you know, I don't know of any groups that have larger boards, I guess. But there are groups that have board levels of varying size.
If I may just add quickly to that, we should have a commercial fisher on the board. And we do. Most groups do have a commercial fisher on the board. I'm a member of the South Puget Sound Group board. Because we're located in Olympia, we have some like ecology people, scientists from ecology on our board. We have a commercial fisherman on our board. We have tribal representation, tribal reps on our board from Nisqually Tribe, for example. So there's 9 members on our board, all very professional, all dedicated, and to oversee the executive director and set the direction of what our budget's going to be, how much is in the budget, and what we're going to spend that money on, and what projects we're going to take on or we're not going to take on. So that's kind of how that works.
Thank you. It seems like a real strength of the whole concept of RFEGs that you're run locally, you're run independent, you're run with a nonprofit board but of community members. You know, it's just a good model, and it probably speaks highly why you have such a good volunteer turnout and, you know, well set up program.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just simply want to personally thank each and every one of you and your volunteer staff. I fully understand the effort and energy and cost that you incur personally in doing some of the things you do. I've been involved in a habitat restoration project on the Skokomish River for a decade, and it costs a lot of money just to be a volunteer helper, and so I much appreciate it. My good friend from Bellingham, Commissioner Smith, basically verbatim said what I was going to say. So the only thing that I wanted to add or...
Say it again.
No, I don't want to do it. Emphasize or ditto is has to do with youth. I just can't emphasize enough how critical it is to get youth in the pipeline on behalf of natural resource exposure, education, participation in harvest, whatever it may be. If we don't get youth involved in the pipeline, I don't like the future. So thank you all for your work.
Commissioner Perry.
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said, and really I just want to thank both your staff and your volunteers. It's a tremendous effort, and I'm always amazed at the amount of work that can get done with a good organization and contributions by volunteers. It is amazing, and I do thank you very much.
Commissioner Mankin.
Yeah, well, I'd be remiss as a salmon biologist if I didn't weigh in on this. I think that Commissioner Smith very eloquently stated my views, and I think that comes from his background as a professor at Western, and they have a way of saying things much more eloquently than I can. So, but in any event, I think that what you're going to be called on when you try to justify your federal budget, and something that the commission could probably use, would be a document that outlined what your success has been over the years. How many stream miles you've restored, what's the size of the populations that have come back to the streams that you've worked on. I think that's going to be very, very telling when you justify what you've been doing. But my compliments. I've been watching you for a long time, and especially people like Paul Dorn, who requires a lot of watching. But he has been a remarkable resource for you in pointing out restoration type activities that are important to him as personally, but also when he represented the Suquamish tribe. Again, my compliments to all of you.
Director Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, I echo all the thanks and appreciation that's been articulated here by
the commissioners. What I'd like to suggest is for us to put together a strategy session to talk about how we can go about. I want to add this, your budget issue, to our federal budget priorities. We try to have a pretty finite list of budget asks, particularly in the climate that we have been in, but maybe in from a federal perspective that we're coming into. We know money's going to be very tight. We have a very close working relationship with the leadership of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I think Commissioner Mankin's idea of getting some supporting documentation would help us. So I would like, and I'll ask Joe to coordinate with Joe and you, Rachel, if that's the appropriate folks, to if we can get just a small work group together to talk about strategies as to how we can add your budget issue to our federal budget agenda and what materials that we could put together to help support that ask, and also to have a discussion about if we can't get 1.5 million, if it's 1 million, or if it's something not zero. So I don't think we ought to be looking at this as it's an all or nothing, because there are compromises being made, and I think we ought to talk about kind of what's our bottom line here to make the program successful and sustainable. So I'll ask Joe to contact Joe to set that up, and we have a federal budget liaison person that's specifically assigned. We'll include them, that person. I think maybe she's Sarah Laborde. She's already talked with you, but I want to make sure that we have your budget issue as part of our agency federal budget agenda, and make sure we have the right supporting documents, and then a strategy about what congressional members and or federal agency staff that we need to include in our discussions.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jennings?
Weighing in. And again, everybody else has said all the nice, great things. I'm just jumping in to offer some additional advice to complement what the director and Commissioner Mankin said, and that is, as you already showed us, that sort of return on investment is what they're going to want to see. And the numbers you showed are exactly the type that they're going to look at, the metrics that everybody's using at the federal level these days. Two is, as you guys pointed out, the leveraging you're getting on the dollars. So what the feds want to see is their little bit of investment pays off as a major multiplier. And the third strength you have is because you're based at the local level with a board of directors and members and volunteers. This is a political decision, and that means that they're allowed to contact their elected officials and provide input to what they think priorities should be. So I think with those three tools in your toolbox and the director's commitment to work with you, I think there's a really good possibility. So.
Okay. Very, very good job. Thanks so much. You've inspired us.
Thanks for the warm reception. We appreciate it.
Thank you for your time. Okay.
I have annual reports from the car. I'll bring them up.
You can have it.